This is Justin Michael Williams, and welcome to the Kingdom Podcast. I am enough. I am golden, baby. I am enough. I am enough. This is for everyone. All beliefs are welcome here. And so it doesn't matter if you call it God, spirit, the universe, crystals, science, or unicorns. You are welcome here. This is our moment to connect to something greater. This is our moment to remember how powerful we really are. Welcome to the kingdom. We begin each session with a prayer. Let's begin. Go ahead and place your hands over your heart. I like to place one over the other. You can do the typical prayer hands if you'd like, but I like to do this. And just take a full breath in and a full breath out. Remembering there's nowhere to go, nowhere to get to. You can give yourself full permission to just be here now. God, spirit, universe, all that is, all that ever has been, and all that ever will be, we thank you. Thank you for bringing this community together. Thank you for keeping us healthy and safe. Thank you for helping us have the courage to learn and grow. And we ask that today, each and every one of us hear the exact message that we need to step into the next transition of our life a little bit more fully and a little bit more fearlessly. Help us remember to trust that there's a bigger plan in place for us than we can ever imagine for ourselves, and help us to rest into that flow, like riding the waves instead of swimming against them. May we remember that even in the darkest moments of our lives, that one of my favorite quotes from Maya Angelou is, "God put a rainbow in every cloud." And so may today's session inspire the hearts and minds of each of us here. And may we have the courage and the remembrance to spread this message and everything we learned today to all the people that we love, so that each of us can become a ripple in the pond, creating waves of change. So I'll be silent for just a moment here. And this is your time now to welcome in your personal prayer. What is your intention? And maybe for today, there's even something that you're releasing or letting go of or shedding from this week or from your life in general. Every Sunday, we have this beautiful ritual of ending what we call a week to step into the newness of the next week. And so let this moment be that reset for you. God, spirit, universe, all that is, all that ever has been, and all that ever will be, we thank you. Thank you for bringing us together. Thank you for opening our hearts and our minds. And may all the words that are spoken here today by me and by our special guests, may he be blessed as well. May all the words that are spoken even in the chat box to one another and beyond be ignited in a space of love and transformation. So it is. Ashe, aho, salam, shalom, amen, satnam, om. Thank you. I just want to name some of those words, right? Look at me. Look at me. I am changing. I'll be better than I am. I'm changing. Right, all these different moments that she has throughout the song, I'll be better than I am. And I think so many of us are having these moments in our lives where we're trying to grow or we're trying to evolve, and we all have some area of our lives, whether it's about our work and career or our creativity or our passions and hobbies or our bodies and our well-being or our spirituality or our self-love or our money or all these different areas that we have of our lives that we're growing into and stepping into and evolving into more deeply. And so today's conversation, going back to my slides here, today's conversation is one I've been wanting to have with you for a long time, but I could not have this conversation with you without the special guest that I'm having today. And today's conversation is called The Power of Transitions. And we're talking practical tools to help you handle the moments of your change in your life. And you'll see how to think about change a little bit differently. And my special guest today, his name is Chip Conley. And Chip is sitting right off to the side here, off on backstage. And I'm here in Mexico, actually, at a place called Modern Elder Academy, which we'll talk more about later. And Chip, I want to just welcome you in. And Chip is somebody who, this is Chip, everybody. Chip!
Hey!
This is Chip, everyone. So Chip is somebody who has guided me through so many transitions in my life, particularly one of the most important ones that I recently just went through. And so I first just want to thank you.
Yes.
In front of my whole community.
It's great to see you in your element.
Yeah.
With your community.
Here we are, and everybody's saying, we'll be saying hello in the chat box. And
hello.
Everybody, Chip is the master of transitions.
By the way, this sounds like Mr. Rogers meets New Age. I love this music.
The song.
I want to be your Mr. Rogers.
Yes, that's it. And so Chip is the master of transitions. Really, he went from being the owner of a rather large boutique hotel company called Joie de Vivre. Did I say it right?
Exactly.
Okay, Joie de Vivre. And then leaving that through a big transition, which I'm sure we might hear about, and going on a trip of 36 festivals in 1 year around the world, which is insane, 36 of the biggest festivals, and then stepping in to being the mentor or advisor to the three founders of Airbnb, and really the main mentor to the CEO, to now opening this space where I'm in right now in Mexico called Modern Elder Academy, MEA, which we'll talk about it more later. And so, Chip, you've gone through so many transitions in your life, and I want to just have you talk about how you've navigated these transitions and like how it's giving you the power to talk about transition with people so fully in such a deep way.
Yeah. You know, I think, first of all, I'm honored to be here. Thank you for joining us today. The thing that's interesting is when we're younger in life, we're very familiar with transitions. We know that adolescence, puberty is an era of transition. We know that, frankly, the process of a baby learning how to walk is a transition. And in the earliest years of our life, we're not self-conscious. And then, of course, in adolescence, we get very self-conscious. But what's curious is that we move into adolescence is a word that is only 115, 116 years old. And there's a new word that was coined a few years ago by academics called middle essence. So middle essence is the period of your life when you actually are going through hormonal, emotional, and physical changes often, usually between age 45 and 60. And for women, we know menopause, classic one. Men have andropause. But we don't know anything about transitions in midlife. And so I endeavored, after I left my full-time role at Airbnb, to write a book called Wisdom at Work, The Making of a Modern Elder. And while I was writing that book down here in Baja, I had this epiphany one day after going for a run on the beach, and I saw you going for a run on the beach today.
I went on a run on the beach this
morning. Good yeah. job. And I came back from a run on the beach, and I just said, why is it we don't help people navigate their transitions in midlife or in any of adulthood? Basically, our guidance counselors went away in high school.
Yeah, we basically turned 18, and then it was like, yeah, figure it all out.
Exactly.
No more transitions.
You had a commencement ceremony, and you were graduated from all of that support you got. And
yeah.
So we don't have a lot of support, formal forms of support in adult life. And this is particularly true in midlife when people are going through a lot of transitions. And I define midlife as 35 to 75. So my friend, you're almost in midlife.
I am. I'm 32. Well, a lot of people why do I come to a place called Modern Elder Academy? But I love that you have these definitions there's a difference between elder and elderly.
Correct. Elderly is probably the last 5 or 10 years of your life.
Yeah.
But being an elder is a relative term. And I learned that at Airbnb. I joined Airbnb at age 52. I'm now 60. I joined at age 52, And the average age in the company was 26. And I was mentoring all three of the founders, but especially Brian, the CEO, co-founder. And he, so I was mentoring him. He was 31, I was 52, but he was also my boss.
Yep.
So I went from being CEO of my own company, growing to 3,500 employees, and then I'm now reporting to someone 21 years younger than me who I happen to be mentoring. So that was a fascinating journey because we have five generations in the workplace today. But what I will just say is language is important. Yeah. We know that. And we know that the African-American community took back the word black in the 1960s. Black was a negative word in the South. And it was people like Malcolm X saying black is beautiful and others that actually took black back.
Yeah.
Yankee was a derogatory term from the Brits toward the colonists. And the colonists took it back. And now we have the New York Yankees. Queer was a bad term to, yeah. You know, you didn't want to be called a queer, you know, on the school ground. But today people own queer. So I'm just helping people to own elder.
Yeah.
And reclaim the word, because reclaiming a word gives a certain level of power to it. And the power is not power over anyone. It's power inside yourself,
yeah,
to feel the sense of renewal that can come from feeling like, okay, I'm going to be a modern elder who is as curious as they are wise. Because that's the difference between an older elder, like the old school elder, the traditional elder, and a modern elder is as focused on their learning and their growth as they are in their dispensing of wisdom.
It's beautiful. There's this space of curiosity that is essential, as an essential ingredient to this.
Curiosity opens up possibility.
Yes.
Wisdom distills down possibility into what's essential.
Yes.
If you can embody both of those, curiosity and wisdom, you can basically have the yin-yang of understanding the world and yourself.
Yeah, so I want to like kind of tether back a little bit to this concept of middle essence.
Yes.
And how so many of us, like my mom is actually here today. She goes,
Mom.
Oh my gosh, I just felt older. I can't possibly have a child in midlife. so
you But know. Honey, you're in midlife as well.
So we're both in midlife.
And you're going to see this one soon enough.
Yes. And so I want to just talk about this fact that we don't have a lot of guidance through transitions that we face in our life. And I think everyone here is going through a transition. If you're going through a transition, you could even type in what it is or put your hands up. And just talk to me about why it's even important to have some guidance during this window.
Well, let's start by saying we are going through a collective transition right now. So you could have Bruce Feiler, who wrote a book called Life is in the Transitions, New York Times bestseller this summer, is a friend. And he says you can sort of look at a box with four different boxes within it. You're either going through a collective or a personal transition, and it's either voluntary or involuntary. Right now we're going through a collective involuntary transition with COVID and other things. And that's pretty rare. And so it does mean that we're going through a time where transition is everywhere.
Yeah.
And that actually also offers opportunity. But let's talk about transitions for a moment. The person who really helped us to understand transitions was a guy named Arnold Van Gennep.
Okay.
He was a cultural anthropologist from 110 years ago studying rites of passage. And what he was able to see in indigenous cultures is that there are often three phases to a rite of passage. You had the leaving of the past,
right,
the ending of something. You have the messy middle when you're liminal. We'll come back to liminal. What is liminal? Justin loves the word liminal. And then you have the new beginning. Think caterpillar, cocoon, chrysalis, butterfly. So, and Joseph Campbell, with his hero's journey, took up Arnold Van Gennep's work and said that is the hero's journey for anybody in life. And then, of course, George Lucas did the Star Wars films based upon Campbell. Well, what we know is any transition you're going to have is likely to have these three phases. And understanding the architecture of transition or the anatomy of a transition will help you to understand where are you and how are you doing with the piece of transition that you're in.
Yeah.
Because often people have a really hard time with the first phase, the letting go.
Yeah. So let's break them down.
Yeah.
We might as well break them down. So the first phase is the new beginning. right?
The first no. thing, no, that's the third
Sorry,
phase.
Sorry, that's the third
no,
phase.
That happens
I just
all the
skipped
time.
All the way to it.
No, because it, because it's strange to start with an ending.
Yes, okay.
It is strange to start with an ending. But if you start with an ending, you recognize you are letting go of something.
Ah, okay. So we, walk us through it step
by
step.
We call that here the Great Midlife Edit. Okay. And the Great Midlife Edit, we do this in this room right behind us. We actually, it's an exercise we do where help, you know, we don't just like start with this, but people sort of are in a place of realizing, I'm ready to let go of something. There are, as we go into our adult life, we actually carry all of the history of identities and relationships and responsibilities and mindsets. And there's a point at which we're supposed to actually say, you know what, let go of some of this. You know, if you're running the midlife marathon, if it's 40 years long from 35 to 75, then you better actually know how to let go of some of that baggage. So the first half of your life is often about accumulating. The second half of your life is about editing. Mm. And so we do this exercise with these...
I remember it. Yeah,
with the name tags. Yeah. So you have these... You write these name tags based upon what are some of the mindsets or the identities or the habits or the ways of seeing yourself that you're ready to let go of. And then we stand in front of each other and we actually do, you know, eye contact with each other while looking at each other's stickers. And then we end up out at the fire pit watching sunset at where we actually throw what it is that we're ready to let go of. So ritual is really important here. So the process of ritual, and you don't have to do ritual as, you know, as formalized as I just described, but having some form of ritual, even just burning a candle and actually and putting a piece of paper in it and saying, I'm letting go of this now.
Yeah.
That process helps you move into that cocoon, that second phase.
Okay.
But if you don't do that, it's really, people wonder sometimes, what's the difference between change and transition? And there is a difference. Now, don't get too semantic about this, but change is usually situational or circumstantial. So it's one of those things where, oh, I'm going to get divorced because my husband, my wife, whomever, my partner, they don't understand me. They're just like, they're so dim.
And somebody's then, going through that right now here, they said.
Three years later, they're married again, and they're saying the same thing about their next partner. So they went through a transition. They went through a change, not a transition. Same thing with bosses. You know, the evil boss that you used to have is the evil boss you have now, even though they're two different people, because somehow there was no psychological or spiritual shift.
Shift inside.
Change is situational and circumstantial. Transition is psychological and spiritual.
Say that again. Change.
Change is circumstantial and situational. Transition is psychological and spiritual.
That's important. Yeah.
Because it actually says you are making, you're realizing there's a metamorphosis going on inside of you.
Yeah.
Because often change is like external. Oh, I want the world to be different than it is. And when you actually go through transition, you're saying, I'm going to rearrange the furniture. I'm going to do some interior design. I hope you're all really stellar interior designers, because interior design is about what you do in transition.
Interior inside of you.
Yes, interior inside of you, yes. For those who aren't catching that.
Yeah.
So that takes you into the second phase. And the second phase of a transition is known as the messy middle. It's known as the call to adventure in Joseph Campbell's words. It's when Luke Skywalker goes off and learns that the Force is with him. It's when you are willing to go and be awkward and learn something new. It often means that you feel like you are really in limbo. So liminal, the word liminal, also limbo, speaks to the idea that you are in between, you're betwixt and between. You are not actually on firm ground. And most of us don't like that.
Yeah.
Especially if we're doing this publicly. To do something, to be in limbo or in transition publicly feels really, can feel humiliating. And so part of what we need to do during that period, that second phase, is to learn how to judge ourselves less.
Yeah.
And this is the difference between growth mindset and a fixed mindset. If you take a growth mindset, so let me explain what that is. Carol Dweck, famous Stanford psychologist, wrote a book on mindset, popularized the idea that there's really two kinds of mindsets in the world. And each of us probably use both of these in different parts of our life. So a fixed mindset is when you are focused on proving yourself.
Mm.
and you define success by winning. Now, gosh, I mean, that's how we grew up. Both of us have the same Enneagram type.
Threes.
We're both threes with a four wing.
Yep.
So we're all four, like, let's go out and win. We see sometimes life as a competition. I mean, I'm just being honest. I'm sorry. It's like there's a positive and negative side of each of these types. But it does mean that we could sometimes get very critical of ourselves, be very self-involved, to see and very curious and maybe concerned about how we look in the world.
Yeah.
So you know that one, right?
Yes.
Mama, you know that one about this one?
Yes. Okay. I've talked about that a whole bunch on here, so people know.
So if that is true, we are stunting our growth.
Yeah.
Because if we're only going to try things that we can do really well and win, then over time, especially as we get older, our sandbox gets smaller and smaller. So a growth mindset, on the other hand, is not about proving yourself. It's about improving yourself.
Mm.
And it is not about winning. It's about learning.
Mm.
So you define success not by being flawless, but by being a learner.
This is amazing.
And if you can move in that direction, it will accelerate your process of that second phase. In essence, it means that that butterfly that's being cooked in that cocoon is going to happen faster. Because frankly, if you aren't very good at being open to being awkward, you're not going to be very good at being liminal.
This is great. It reminds me of, because people are always asking, so many of you are asking, like, if I'm in that in-between state, like, how do I move through it more quickly? And what people are more thinking of is, how do I win and get to the end?
How do I win and get to the end? Or how do I change the external circumstances so I can get to, like, I can win? And often it's just an internal game. And you know, Bruce Feiler did a long study and showed that, you know, the average transition takes 4 to 5 years.
Listen to that.
Ouch.
4 to 5 years is the average transition.
You can accelerate it. You can accelerate it by the process of actually getting conscious and intentional about this second phase.
So I want to get a little bit deeper into this second phase.
Yes.
Because this is one, so Chip knows, when I heard the word liminal, that was like my Baja Aha, as we call it here in Baja in Mexico, of 2 years ago in 2018. And so I love this idea when we use the caterpillar butterfly metaphor, that when the caterpillar goes into the cocoon, it enters what's called this liminal state, and all of the cells of the caterpillar become imaginal cells. Can you talk about this a little
bit
more?
So what it says is that, wow, that caterpillar had within it all of the qualities that were ultimately going to become the butterfly. It had within it all of the DNA that was necessary for the butterfly to actually come to fruition. And so on a personal level, what does that mean for us? It means, frankly, within you, you actually have some of the qualities that are going to ultimately allow you to become the butterfly. Now, I want to be really clear here. I am not talking about magical thinking here.
Yeah.
This is not about just saying, I'm a butterfly. The caterpillar to butterfly journey has a really messy middle, gooey and dark. And so it doesn't mean you have to go through a gooey dark time, but it does mean there are steps you have to take. It does mean that you, frankly, I do think as you have more life experience under your belt, you have developed and cultivated your wisdom, and you can harvest that based upon pattern recognition.
Yeah.
Because you can see the patterns. You know how this film ends.
Yeah.
Because I've been through this before. And whether it's a relationship or whether it's a new job or whether it's the emotional depression you go into because of a trigger, as you get older, we become better at seeing this.
Yeah.
And why is that important? Because frankly, it allows you to sidestep it much more quickly.
We did a session on the power of wisdom with Vanessa, actually.
Oh, yes.
And looked at the etymology of the word wisdom, which is like a master of wit when we look at the etymology. And I thought it was really interesting to look at that word wit, like a trickster, because it's like being able to see through the patterns that are constantly happening so we can work our way around them to do something different.
And have a sense of humor. I mean,
One
of the things I've really appreciated is that I think as you get older, and again, for those of you who are younger, this is not about older people like having all the power, not at all. We're going to get to that in a moment, in a couple of minutes. I actually think that I need to learn from you as much as you need to learn from me. There's a reciprocity. But one of the things that I've learned in my own life is, yes, as you get older, there may be more gravitas from traditional wisdom, but there's also more levity. And being able to laugh at yourself and your patterns, and being able to be less self-conscious and more self-deprecating, but not in the kind of way that is actually cruel to yourself, but more in the way that is humble and human. Isn't it interesting that those two words are, you know, are come from the same place? As does humiliation. Humility taken a little too far. So all I can say is that second phase is the hardest phase for a lot of people, because it is the phase where we're awkward and we feel as adults, we're supposed to have it all together.
Yeah.
And men, let's be like, okay, you men in the audience, I mean, there's a lot of women in this audience, but there's a handful of you men
too. We got the men. Yep.
God, you know, we weren't born for this. Actually, maybe we were, but we're not brought up this way in the sense that, oh my God, when I'm going through stuff in midlife, I'm going to talk to other people about it. Well, I had 5 friends commit suicide during the Great Recession, all of them men age 42 to 52. I had a flatline experience. One of my transitions in life was going flatline, literally to the other side. I know what it looks like. We can come back to that.
Yes.
What I realized from that experience in my own life and from the 5 men I know who passed away by their own hand is that we as a society have not prepared any of us, but especially not men, for navigating midlife transitions or navigating adult transitions. And for men, often it has to do with not having social wellness or emotional insurance. You get property and liability insurance, but where's your emotional insurance? Men don't buy that policy.
Well, and I found out from one of our compadres here that suicides are going up, but 70% of all suicides are men.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's 70%. That's major. And, you know, Chip, with this liminal state, before we move on, and I'm coming back to this flatline story, by the way.
We got to get to the third stage.
Yeah. So, this liminal stage, I had this moment with Chip when we were on the phone. We have like a call pretty much every quarter.
Yeah.
And I was getting ready to go on my book tour. And this was when I was planning, I think in December before the book was coming out in February. And I was saying, I think I want to move. I think I want to leave LA, but I'm not sure where I want to go. Chip, what I'm going to do is put all my stuff into storage and go on my book tour. And I remember you said, you're putting yourself voluntarily into a liminal state.
Yeah.
And what's crazy is I thought I knew what I was getting into. Little did I know, 3 months later, my book tour was going to be canceled while I had already put all my stuff in storage in between stops. And so I've been now for 11 months since January. I moved out in January. Homeless, quote unquote. And I say that with quotes because I am privileged enough to not be homeless. But everybody's always like, oh my God, where are you gonna go? Do you know where you're gonna go? Where are you gonna get? Don't you feel so anxious that you don't know where you're gonna be? And because of your teachings on liminal, I actually know that I'm just in the in-between state.
You're also right here.
I'm here.
Like Ram Dass, be here now.
Be here now.
You know, wherever you are, there you are. I mean, wherever you are in the world, you have the ability to be aquí, here, in this moment.
In this moment.
So
let's go to, I'll just say this last thing. It's the biggest thing that I've learned from Chip around liminality is, yes, you can do things to accelerate it, like being curious, being open, trying new things. Like Elizabeth Gilbert talks about, you know, in Big Magic, following your curiosities and your interests and being a beginner to help you start to form into that new you. But you can't skip it, right? You can't skip it. And when I got comfortable in just saying, I'm in the messy middle, and if I rush a decision right now, I'm not gonna actually land where I wanna be.
Right.
And then it makes the messy middle even longer. And so if you're in a transition, I know that it might be challenging and hard, and this is why we have mindfulness and all the things that we've been talking about here to help you have the resilience and the capacity to hold that before you get to the final stage.
And the final stage.
Yeah.
So the final stage is interesting because you'd think after you've had those first two stages of ending something and then going through the messy middle, the liminal stage, that by the time you get to the third stage, you're ready for it. And a lot of people aren't. I mean, it's the new beginning. And sometimes the new beginning, let me also say, transitions can be very liberating. They're like, wow, this was so good. Sometimes you don't say that until you're in the third stage, though. But the third stage is, although actually you going liminal and sort of like being, less weighed down.
Yeah.
Was very liberating.
Huge.
Yeah. So it's yeah. so it's not familiar.
Yeah.
So if one of the things to actually ask yourself that'll tell you whether you're in a fixed or a growth mindset is, how much do I value comfort on this particular decision?
This reminds me, I have to say something.
Yes.
So it reminds me of, I remember having this transition in my head. I was on the phone with my friend Christy, and I had, my tour had got canceled. I had this suitcase.
Your buddy,
because
we know Christy. Christy. She's the one you always go to.
Yeah, Christy, yeah. So I always go to. Everybody, I've had her as a guest here. And I remember saying at one point on the phone with her, this is the same conversation. I went, oh my God, all I have is a suitcase. And I went, oh, all I have is a suitcase? You know what I mean? Like, that was a transition of like, all I have is a fucking suitcase. I can go wherever I want. Like, I can do whatever I want.
Well, you don't even need a suitcase necessarily.
Yeah, not even need, yeah, don't even need that.
You know, a little backpack over your
and
shoulder.
And I just want to, there's a lot of people talking about in the chat box that they've lost men and friends to suicide.
Yes.
And they're just speaking that here. So I just want you to know that we're like, we're here, we see you and we're with you. And I know that brings up some emotion. So we don't want to just run past that. And just know that, thank you for everybody in the chat box who's sending love and holding them in such a beautiful space. So anyway, continue. I interrupted you.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's know that suicide in the United States is 50% higher than it was in the year 2000 for people 45 to 64. And it's actually, the percentage is even higher for young people. So the third stage, this idea of a new beginning, if you've done the first two and you feel good, you might just fall straight into it and it'd be perfect. But sometimes people have a hard time with this new beginning because there's an element of like, wow, I'm a new person.
Mm.
And guess what? Sometimes the problem is not you feeling it. It's the people around you.
Ooh, that's a word.
So the new beginning can be a real struggle for those who wanted you to stay the way you were.
Yeah.
Because often, sometimes that first and second stage are things that are happening inside of you. It may be happening externally too, but you get to the third stage and you're ready to say, ah, I'm a debutante. I'm moving into the world. I'm debuting my new identity. And people are like, I liked your old identity, partly because your old identity meant that I didn't have to change my identity, because your change and your new, you know, transition of what you've gone to is actually forcing them to ask questions of themselves.
Yeah, it's that reflection.
So the thing that I would just say as a piece of advice, if you want it, and you don't have to take my advice.
We want it.
when you're preparing for that third stage, you better be really solid inside yourself that this feels right to you. There's a beautiful poem by John O'Donohue, the Irish poet who's unfortunately passed away not long ago, called A New Beginning. Or for a new beginning. Look for it. Put it in the show notes if you have show notes.
Yeah.
For a new beginning. It speaks to the idea that inside of you, there's something stirring. And that stirring inside of you is the evidence that you are in the process of transition.
Yeah.
And when you get to the other side and you are ready to debut to the world, that this is the new transition of who you are, what you're doing, where you are, etc., recognize that you better be solidly embodied in your process, because others may be threatened by it.
Yeah, this is big. And so as we're looking at these three, I just want to make sure that you all have them, and I want you to type them into the chat box once Chip confirms them. Stage one, letting go.
Letting go, or you know, the ending.
The ending. Stage one is the ending. Stage two is the messy middle,
correct,
the liminal state. And then stage three is the new beginning.
That's right.
Yes. And we always talk about, it's so interesting, Chip, because a lot of what we've been talking about in this community is around, and I've been using the word change, but it's actually transition.
It's fine. You know, would just, don't worry, honestly, yeah. The semantics
don't matter, but it's an interesting way to think about it, because I've been saying, even for the movement for like equality and social justice, mm-hmm. it's like, we can elect a new president, we can burn down the whole system, we can do all these things, but if we haven't transitioned inside of ourselves, then we just end up rebuilding the same thing all over again. We'll end up here again in another 4 years, another 8 years.
Transition has the same root as transformation.
Mm.
So just know, they both have the same root.
Mm. That's it. Yes, I didn't even think. And I'm a word nerd sometimes. But I know. You're a bigger word nerd than I am.
You and I were separated at birth, but 28 years apart.
Totally. So, Chip, I want to talk about this flatline experience with you.
Yes.
Because I think this story is going to be
important.
It
changed my
people.
Life.
Yeah, this is a transition.
Transitioned my life, for sure. Well, so here's what happened. Long story short, I've been very fortunate in my life to be a mentor to a lot of fascinating and interesting people who are blossoming today. And one of them is a guy named Gavin Newsom, who happens to be the governor of California. And so I was he was my first mentee. I was his mentor, and I still am all these years later. Now 25 years later, he had a bachelor party. I broke my ankle at it. I didn't realize I had a bacterial infection in my leg from a cut I'd gotten on my leg at that same event. My leg went septic. I didn't die, but it happened at his wedding. And so I got put on a very strong antibiotic, and I went off to St. Louis on crutches, which I'm like, broken ankle, septic leg, antibiotics.
And you're like, I'm going to keep going.
I should have been at home, you know, lesson, my friend, you know, should have been at home, but you know, I'm a three with four wings. So I go and perform. And I gave a speech on crutches in St. Louis. And at the end of the speech, I was signing books. And this African-American woman looked at me, and I was signing one of my books called Peak, How Great Companies Get Their Mojo from Maslow. And she looked at me and said, you look very white. It's the last I remember. You look very white.
Oh, no.
And I went out. I went unconscious, not probably dead yet, but who knows, because I, you know, what we know is I went unconscious. They laid me on the ground. I was out for about 3 to 5 minutes, which is a long time. And the paramedics showed up really quickly. They put heart monitors on me, you know, stripped my shirt away on the stage in front of all these people. And I was just on a gurney. And that's when I went flatline the first time.
Wow.
And so I flatlined 9 times in 90 minutes. And so what I saw on the other side, because I would come back from the other side and I would say to whoever's with me holding my hand, here's what I saw. And most often of those 9 times, it was a nurse in the ER. And she said, you keep telling me the same thing. I was like, okay, I guess
it's consistent. Yeah.
So what I saw, because I know you want to hear that.
Yes, yeah, what did you see?
So what I saw was this, it was sort of interesting. I'm a total beach nut, as you know. If you've come to MEA, we're literally on a Mexican beach, pretty spectacular, pretty deserted, spectacularly beautiful. But my other side experience, el otro lado, to use a little Spanish, which they use down here, el otro means the other side. My experience was being in a mountain chalet, and there was a huge skylight, and it was a gorgeous blue sky, and there was light coming in during the daytime, and the light was coming in the skylight and hitting the very spectacularly beautiful wood floor. But the wood floor actually had a frangipani, like a tropically scented oil on it. And so it was the light was coming in, hitting the oil, and then the oil was throwing a kaleidoscope of colors on the wall. And then the oil was actually heading down a set of stairs. So there was a set of stairs going down. I was either on the second floor or on the first floor, going to the first floor or the basement. And the oil was moving really, really, really slowly. Sort of like back in the day, for those of you who are older, Anticipation, the song with Carly Simon, Heinz 57 commercial. Yes, that, you know, I'm showing my age. So what I saw was this sense of beauty and aesthetics. I was an observer in the room. There were no people. And what I think I really appreciated was the aesthetic on all levels. There was also just a feast on the table. So it was like every one of my senses was being stimulated. But the fact that the actual oil was going down the stairs, but exceptionally slowly, was almost a message to myself of saying, slow down. And interestingly enough, just 2 years earlier than that, 3 years earlier than that, my company, Joie de Vivre, had created a hotel in San Francisco called the Hotel Vitale. I know that
I stayed there.
You stayed there. Yeah. Lisa,
mom, we stayed there together, Mom. Yeah,
Mom, you stayed there. Lisa's on. You know, she's still on the call right now. She stayed there. She says it's her favorite hotel. We had these slippers in the hotel that actually said slow on one slipper and down on the other slipper. Slow down.
So they were trying to get you the message a long
so
time
So I
ago.
Guess, yeah. So yeah. I. So what happened after that was it woke me up to the fact that I was allergic to that antibiotic, and it woke me up to the idea that, wow, I don't want to do this anymore. I need to transition out of, at that point, I'd been CEO of my company for 22 years. It had become a large organization, the second largest boutique hotelier in the United States. And I just knew. And the identity was like a straitjacket.
Yeah.
I loved it until I hated it. And I just needed, I knew I needed to let go of it.
Yeah.
And it took me 2 years to get to the place where the company could sell. And I went through a lot of internal transitions. And then when it sold, June of 2010, I was in my third phase of that transition. And I luckily had gotten to the place of like, I am so ready to move on. But now the world learned about it. And gosh, the world didn't want me to be anybody but the founder and CEO of Joie de Vivre. Not the world, but many people in the world.
Yeah.
And so it was hard. But I was so settled because the first and second phases, I had done my work.
Yeah.
That by that third phase, I was there.
This reminds me of the transition that I was going through in 2018 when I came here, and I did the whole, this is what I did with my stickers and wrote down that everything you were talking about. So most of you all know that, you know, in 2008, I had started my company while I was in college, my marketing company. And, you know, so many of you know the story of, you know, me always wanting to speak, always wanting to sing, always wanting to be in the front of the stage and sharing my gifts, but hiding because of being bullied and teased and growing up in the hood in a poor neighborhood, you know, in a home with gunshot holes outside my house, that like I had made this virtue out of being what other people thought was successful. And so instead of doing music, I did marketing, you know, instead of doing this. And so from 2008 to 2018, when I came here, I had this marketing company that was the front of who I was.
Yeah.
And it was where I really held my value.
And it was successful.
And it was successful. And people would introduce me as that. And it was this thing that I was ready to transition out of. And once I did it, 2018, I was here at MEA and I said, you had us do that exercise with 1 week from now, 1 month from now,
right,
one.
Right.
And I said, by 1 year from now, I will have let go of my last marketing client and done it in a year-long transition. I did it and then let go of it. And when the moment came that I said, I'm no longer doing that, people were still trying to make me do their marketing. And I was like, I'm not doing that anymore. And like, but don't you just, do you still do, you know? And so finally, it's taken, honestly, another year for people to get used to the fact that no one introduces me as a marketing person anymore. But it took a whole year for that really to happen.
Yeah.
So anyway, and for me to let go of what I thought was the prestige that came from saying I've had a marketing company.
Listen, our identities serve us until they don't.
Yeah.
And when they don't serve us anymore, they suffocate us.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yeah. That's how I was
wordplay.
In LA. Yeah, I'm like, I have so many little things that I'm writing down that have nothing to do with the notes that I took. But Chip, I want to guide people through a practice, unless there's something else about transition you want to make sure that we mention. And let me just, I feel like there's something that I want to make sure that we mention that's in my notes that I'm not remembering.
Look at your notes. And what I'll say is, just so everybody knows, so I sold that company. I decided I want to go to festivals of all kinds, like religious pilgrimages, not just music festivals. I was a founding board member of Burning Man, the arts festival. And so I was fascinated by the idea of collective effervescence. And then I ended up being asked to join Airbnb, and I did that for 4 years full time, and then the last 4 years as an advisor. And I am now, basically co-founder of MEA, Modern Elder Academy, and
Modern.
Loving it.
And this is where we're at right now, and we'll tell you more about Modern Elder Academy and how you can come and go through this process and what's happening here now in a little while. But actually, so I asked some of the other people who were here at MEA if they had any questions for you.
Oh, wow!
And Melanie, who's here with us right now. Sorry, Melanie, we already got that answer. So I'm going to ask Shelley. She said, Shelley wrote this incredible book called Soulbatical. And Shelley wanted to ask you for advice for when people are in the messy middle, in it. And it's not an easy messy middle when it's like you feel down, you feel depressed, you feel like you're in that dark moment. How do you continue to take steps forward, like in your day-to-day life, when you can't see where you're going and you can't go back to where you were? What do you do?
Well, there's two good answers here. And in my own experience, I've seen both of these work. Number one is you create this emotional insurance I mentioned. We don't think of this, but we need, like, just like we need property and liability insurance for a rainy day, we need emotional insurance. And what does that mean? It means the people in your life who are there to help support you through your transition. Now, why MEA has been so popular or so well needed, I guess, right now, is because when those people are, the people who you are going through transition with and who are supporting you are actually going through their transition too, it is combustibly positive.
Yeah.
Because you learn from each other.
Yeah.
So number one is having some social wellness. It's interesting that the word wellness starts with the letters we, illness starts with the letter I. So we need to learn to think of wellness in a more collective way. So that's the first one. Secondly, find small wins. Mm. When you can build a momentum of victory such that you can see you're making small progress, you will actually build on that progress. Mahali Csikszentmihalyi, who popularized the concept of flow, taught me this. And he said, listen, when you get into flow, you don't get in there like a natural overnight. You actually have to go what we call the challenge skill two-step. Challenge, skill, challenge, skill, challenge, skill. Which basically means you have to be willing to do small improvements and then adapt to that and feel good about it. And then you can go further. Because what happens a lot of times is people get so critical of themselves that they want big change or big transition all overnight.
Yeah.
And then they think, oh, I'm not very good at this.
Yeah.
And so it's just
and
important.
It keeps them in a cycle of like, I can't.
It's in a cycle, and then there's an element of like, I just need to have some confidence.
Yeah.
And you confidence. So at the end of the day, it's a bit of how do you build confidence? Confidence, you do it slowly, one thing at a time. And how do you have that sense of safety net? And you do that with other people.
It reminds me of Preston Smiles, who was on the podcast a long time ago, had talked about getting out of your comfort zone. And he said a lot of people, if their comfort zone, let's say on a scale of 1 to 10, is a 5, then they try to do an 11. And right. You do an 11 and you freak out and you think you're not good enough and then you never want to go in your comfort zone again. Right. And now your comfort zone's a 4.
Right.
You know, and he says, so instead of that, if you have a 5, try a 6 and then a 7.
Also look at what triggers you.
Yeah.
So I'm doing three things. I'm learning three things right now, and I'm doing it with a growth mindset on two of them, and with a fixed mindset on one. Guess which one is not doing so well?
Uh-oh.
The growth mindset. I am learning Spanish at age 60, and I learn it because I have fun with it. And there's a great TED talk about this. It's like if you want to learn something, actually learn how to have fun with it because you don't take yourself so seriously. I'm also learning yoga, and what I knew with yoga. I mean, I've been doing yoga most of my life. I love meditation, but I always struggled with yoga. Why? Because I get so worried about what I look like.
Yeah.
And so I get really wrapped up in seeing everybody else in the room. So I now, and meditation, no, because I close my eyes. So I've always loved meditation.
That's how I am with dance, yeah. Like you are with yoga.
Yeah. So yeah. I now do one-on-one yoga with Teddy, our mindfulness teacher here. And it's so much easier for me because I'm actually not criticizing myself because of how I look with other people. Now, what am I not doing well with? Surfing. Surfing, because you know what? You can do one-on-one yoga class up on my terrace in my house, but surfing, there are people in the stands watching you on the beach, and you can't do it sort of singularly. So how have I done it? Well, I sneak off and do it early in the morning, but I finally at some point just said, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just not very good at this, and I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to just enjoy wipeouts.
Yeah.
And then I started to get a little bit better.
So when you're saying notice your triggers, like the trigger being, because I have this trigger, the trigger being people observing and watching.
Yes.
So it's okay to take that trigger out so that you can experience it, and it's at least at first.
If that's the way to start building some confidence.
To start, yeah.
So I feel much more comfortable going to a yoga class now with a bunch of people in it.
Yeah.
But I needed to get over my trigger.
Got it. That's amazing. Yeah, so you have the private hit. So I'm the same way with dance. So like everybody looks...
Do something frustrating.
No, I can't. And I'm also wearing sweats underneath, like, so we're not doing that. So anyway, everybody looks at me and they're like, are you a dancer? Like I walk into a dance class and people want to put me in the front row because they think I look like a dancer. I'm not a dancer. I like dancing, but I've never been trained. And so in LA, I've always wanted to go to dance classes, but every time I go, I suck so bad. And dance is the worst. They put you in the center, everybody go, and I'm like, so bad.
Yeah, at least in yoga, you're doing downward dogs. So you're not seeing anybody else sometimes, but in dance, you're sort of seeing everybody else.
Yes, that's the point. And so I would leave there feeling so defeated. And so what I did, actually, when I was writing my book, is I got a private dance teacher to come to my house 3 times a week, and I felt so good, but I still never made it to a class. So anyway, I'll work on this.
Surface. That's a growth mindset.
So this is really good. So to answer Shelley's question, we have those two ways that are incredible to help us kind of move forward. We're in that dark night to find those small wins, you know, inside. And so I had Chip prepare for us an exercise that we can all do together as a community to start looking at how we can start to step into this a little bit more fully. So, Chip.
And this one is going to be something that we talk about the very first night here at MEA. And it really speaks about aging. And so for those of you who are like really young, like, oh, it's this old guy talked about aging. No, this is relevant to any point in your life. If you're younger than 18, it may be less relevant to you. But if you're 18 or older, it will be relevant. So I want you to think for a moment about two things. One that's really obvious. How old are you? And then think about what that age is. And then the next thing I want you to think about is how long are you going to live? At what age are you going to expire in this bodily form? Now, a lot of people have lots of ideas on that one. That's the variable. The other one's fixed. You have an age.
Yeah.
So here's the thing I want you to think about. What percentage of your adult life is still ahead of you? So let me say that again. What percentage of your adult life is still ahead of you? So my father and I talked about this when we were scuba diving. My dad learned how to scuba dive at age 60. He's now 83. But this was 3 years ago at age 80. When he was 80 and I was 57. And so I had gone on an online site that morning before going out and scuba diving with him. And I'd said, okay, I'm going to put all my details in there and they'll tell me how long I'm going to live. Now, it was obviously a bit of a parlor game. It's not very scientific. But it said I was going to live till 98. And so I came out to my dad and I said, so dad, how long are you going to live? Now, mind you, he was 80 at the time. And my dad said to me, I'm going to live till I'm 98. And so I was like, oh, dad, wow. And my dad said to me, oh, and my dad did the math really quickly. He's a math whiz. He said, Chip, oop.
Okay.
If I'm going to live till age 98, Chip, I have just entered the fourth quarter of my life.
Wow, at age 80.
Of his adult life. If you start counting it from age 18.
Mm.
And then for me, at age 57, if I lived till 98, I had 39 years of adulthood behind me. I had 41 years of adulthood ahead of me. At age 57, I was not even at halftime.
Okay.
So the thing I want you to do is the following.
All right, we're going
to
do this together, everybody.
Do the math exercise. If you're 42 and you're going to live till 90, you're basically a third of the way through your adult life. Remember, you're looking at from 18 forward.
Okay,
we'll do it live and I'll get a calculator.
Yeah, okay, so you get the calculator. Everybody can grab their calculator. So I'm 32, all right? So I've always said that if I live until I'm 80, I'm happy.
But do you think you're going to only live till you're age 80? I don't think so, my
friend. Think maybe more. Okay, assuming everything goes well, as long as I'm healthy and well, 90. Let's go to 90.
That's all?
Do you think I should go higher?
You can do whatever we want, but I think
I just don't
want
to be falling apart.
You start getting used to it.
Okay.
No, you don't start. But no, this is how long you think you will live.
Okay.
Not how long you want to live. Let's say 90. Let's use 90.
We're going to use 95.
95.
Okay. So Justin is 32 now.
So how
He's
many,
live
how many
he's
years?
95.
If you're 32 minus 18, is what?
I don't know. You tell me. 32 okay. minus 18 is
14.
18? No.
14. 32 minus 18 is 14. Right?
Okay. So 14.
Okay. And from 32 to 95 is 63. So basically, if you take 95 and you subtract out 18, it means you will have a total of 77 years of adult life.
Yeah.
You are 14 years into your 77 years. So what percentage is ahead of you? It would be 63 divided by 77. I hope you guys are following me. 82% of his adult life ahead of him.
82% left. Did you guys see how to do that? So that, what's so amazing is we think, even those of us who are in our 30s, and I know a lot of you here, and like Alonzo, 29, and those who you can type your ages in, everybody thinks, oh my God, I have done so much of my life already. Like I should have it all figured out.
You have so much.
I'm only 20% of the way through.
You're not even. You're not even 20% of the
19.
Way through. You're yeah, exactly. 18 really percent of the way through. So here's the thing. Why is this an important question? Well, first of all, it will wake you up to how much life you still, adult life you still have ahead of you. And number two is the second part of my question. Here's the question. What is it that you know now that you wish you'd known 10 years ago? Justin, I'll ask you. What do you know now? Just be brief. What do you know now at age 32 that you wish you'd known at 22?
That all the things that I was most embarrassed about are actually the things that make me the most special.
Beautiful answer. We did not rehearse.
We didn't plan that. No.
Yours doesn't have to be quite as eloquent. So now, Justin, knowing that, what do you think you wish you knew? What do you think at age 42 you wish you could learn now? In other words, at age 42, what do you wish you had actually learned at age 32? It's a really hard question.
That I learned how to actually build real wealth.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what's like coming up at age 42.
Okay. So then what that says is at age 32 today, it is something that you should be focusing your learning and curiosity
and my curiosity on. I love that.
So for me, I'm 60. I live in Mexico two-thirds of the
time.
Hold on.
We have to pause. There's so many people saying they're having trouble with the math.
Okay.
So we're going to help. We're going to walk you all through this because we want to make sure you get this, okay? So get your age now, okay? Whatever age you are now, and subtract 18 from it. Right? Am I walking through this
correct?
Right?
Yes.
Okay. So subtract 18 from it. So then that is the amount of adult life you've lived so far.
So let's use an example.
Yeah.
Someone's 40. They have lived 22 years of adult life. 40 minus 18 equals 22.
Okay. Everyone's like, what's the formula? Equals 22. Okay. And then what you do is you think of how long you think you're going to live. So let's just say it's 100.
100. That's
okay.
Simple.
So 100, you'll take how long you think you're going to live and you'll subtract how long you've had your adult life up until now, right?
So what you'll do is, here's what you do. If you're going to live to 100, you could take 100 minus 18. So you'll have 82 years of adulthood.
Okay.
And so the math you would do for someone who is 40 and they're going to live to 100 is they know that they have so far had 22 years of adulthood and they have 82 years total. So they are only 22 divided by 82 in terms of how much they've lived.
Right.
And then so you do the math on that.
22. 22, so you divide the amount of time that you've spent in adulthood to how the total time you have in adulthood. So 22
divided by
82.
Is you're 27% of the way through your adulthood.
That's nothing.
So what you could say, so that means how much do you have left? Well, you just do the opposite of that and you say, okay, you have 60 years left, 60 years left of adulthood from 40 to 100 divided by 82. And that means it's basically the inverse of 27, so it would be 73%.
We're all trying to do math here. 70, so you still have 73% left.
You basically have, what that says here is for someone who's 40 and living to 100, you've just finished the first quarter of your life, to use a little bit of sports terms.
Wow.
So you've finished, in a four-quarter game, you finished the first quarter. And at age 40, sometimes you feel like, oh my God, it's all over.
Yeah, so this is good. So even if y'all are still working on the math, don't stress about the math. You can look at the number of years even to get a sense. Go ahead.
And so this goes back to the questions like, okay, once you know this, like, okay, this is a fun game, but what do you do with this?
Yeah.
Well, what you do with this is to say, at age 60, I'm learning Spanish. Because I know, frankly, at age 60, that at age 70, if I'm living in Mexico two-thirds of the time, I better learn Spanish now because I don't want to think 10 years from now, why didn't I learn Spanish 10 years ago? What I'm thinking right now is, why didn't I learn it in my teen years? I grew up in Southern California. I learned French, hence joie de vivre, that my hotel company. But I can learn Spanish now, and it'll be easier learning it now than it will be 10 years from now.
Right, and I think what you're saying is something that I always think of. Like, I remember so many of us, we have these moments where in the moment we're in now, we think, oh, I waited too long. I'm too old to do that. I waited too long. I should have done it when I was younger. And I remember even when I was in my 20s thinking, oh, I should have started dancing when I was 12, you know, and then I'd be better. And so we all are going to have that moment where we look back, and every time you look back from 10 years in the future, you think, oh my God, I was a baby. I could have totally done it, you know?
Regret. So I wrote a book called Emotional Equations, and studied 18 different emotions in that book. Regret is fascinating. It's twice as strong when you actually have something that you wish you'd done, but you didn't do, as when you did something and you wish you hadn't done it. Why? It's twice as strong because you can never get back what it was like at that time. But here's the beauty of life. You can have a regret from 10 years ago, and in most cases, you can actually put it into fruition or put it into action now. Now, if you didn't get married to the person and they're married now, you know, maybe then you're like Prince Charles in The Crown with Camilla, which I've been watching the last week. He had a lot of regret that he never married her. But so, yeah, and sometimes the regret, you can't go away if you can't. But actually, in his case, ultimately he did. But, yeah, regret's a bummer emotion, especially if you actually get into the mindset you're too old.
Yeah.
Just remember that this is one other little trick. When you're in that mindset, you know, I haven't met my soulmate, and I may never meet my soulmate because I'm too old. ... Yet I have not met my soulmate yet. I have not learned to surf yet. I have not perfected and forget about perfection because that'll stunt you. I have not learned to enjoy dancing like I'd like to.
Yet.
... Yet.
So add the word yet to all of it. Oh, and that's huge because that changes the mindset for all of us.
It helps you.
So because there's so many of you in the chat box, I'm cracking up. Somebody said, I'm too old to do this math. So I'm going to do one more for you all. Okay. And I'm going to do like my mom said to do my mom's, just so we have a full recap on this. So you're going to walk me through it.
Okay.
So my mom is 56 and she says she's living till she's 98. So walk me through each step, Chip, and you guys can pay attention. Last try.
So 56 mom, is Barbara?
Barbara.
Okay. Yep. Barbara. Hi Barbara. How you doing?
My mom's going to come here one day.
Oh, good. I can't wait to hang out with you.
Yeah.
Barbara, so 56 minus 18, you turned to be an adult at age 18, is equal to 38.
38.
38. So you have 38 years of adulthood.
So far.
And you're going to live till 98. And so guess what? If you're, so 98, first of all, you can do 98 minus 18 means that you're going to have a total of 80 years of adulthood.
Yeah.
18 years of childhood, 80 years of adulthood gets you to 98. So what we know is you are, what we said, 38 years divided by 80, you are just under 50%.
50%.
You're 47.5% of the way through your adulthood. So let's think about that, Barbara. You are not even halftime yet.
Even at half, 47.
You know, and now that you can, you know that you're not even at halftime, I think it's time for you to try out for the Warriors. The halftime show, the cheerleaders who are actually in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. I don't know if anybody's ever seen the Golden State Warriors, but they actually have their young, nubile cheerleaders, and then they actually have these cheerleaders who are, I can't remember what they're called. If anybody remembers what they're called, put it in the chat, but they're literally people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s who go on the court and they're cheerleaders because guess what? They did this exercise.
This is amazing. So, you know what? I love that because and this is why bringing it back to this concept of elder is so important, because so many people think they hit 50, they hit this, and then they're old or whatever, but that's not actually how so many people like my mom are even living. And so there's this mindset shift or this new generation actually that is not like what my grandparents did or what your parents did I don't know what your parents did. Your dad surfing at 80 or scuba diving at 80. So can you just close us out, I think, with this concept of how we can look at aging, at no matter what our age is, a little bit differently?
So there's I'm going to get a little geeky for a second. So there's a professor from Yale named Becca Levy, and she did some really conclusive studies that showed that when you shift your mindset on aging at any age, this is not just people who are, you know, 60 and older, you shift your mindset on aging from a neutral or negative to a positive, you add 7.5 years to your life.
Wow.
And if you do that, actually, you're adding more years to your life than if you actually start learning how to work out or you actually stop to smoke. So shifting your mindset on aging not only adds years to your life, it adds good years to your life. Because when you shift your mindset on aging, you tend to actually be living a better life.
And I even heard, I feel like I've heard you say that there's something about even when people retire, it takes 2 years off of their lives.
Yeah, when
right?
people retire, there's, again, conclusive evidence that shows that actually people shorten their length of their life. It doesn't make any sense. You'd think people are just relaxing and enjoying, but in fact, they get they lose sense of purpose, sense of wellness, and a sense of community.
This is amazing. I love this. They're all doing each other's equations in there. And so, Mom, it's amazing. You have 53% left of life. And so I love this look, Chip, because even for me, as I'm looking at 80% or whatever, like, there's so much possibility there. Right. We don't think of ourselves as, oh, I've already lived my life, like I'm done. It's, wow, I have more than half of my life left.
Yeah, adult life.
Adult life left.
You know,
yes.
The little trick here in Chip the Magician here is that we are only looking at adult life. But why is that relevant? Well, because frankly, for most of us, that's when we had choice in our life. And when we have choice in our life and we take on personal agency and have the autonomy to make good decisions or bad decisions, but we learn from them and we actually don't have someone standing on top of us and telling us what we have to do, that's when we had the opportunity to make the most important choices of our life.
Yeah.
Most of those choices up till age 18 were made for us.
Yeah, this is huge. Chip, I'd love for, as we're closing, and clearly everybody's in love with you because we could just talk for all day. I am too. I love this man so much. This, like, you have no idea how much. I wouldn't be here doing all that I'm doing right now if it wasn't for this guy, really, truly. And so it's a gift to bring Chip to this community, and I would love for you to just give everybody a little takeaway, something they could take with them as they as they go off and they have this new mindset now.
I would just say, gosh, the most important thing in life is to pursue what I call long life learning. We're familiar with lifelong learning. Lifelong learning you can do at age 30 or age 70. But when you actually move into a place in your life where you're saying, I want to live a long life. How do I live a life that's as deep and meaningful as it is long? We as a society have gotten really good at the quantity side of, like, helping people live longer. Not so good at the quality side. And so I would just say I'd leave you with focus on the deep and meaningful, not just the length.
Amazing. So, Chip, I'll have you here to experience what we do in all of our sessions together,
okay.
Our last kind of moment. So we are going to do our golden nugget practice, everybody. So you've had a lot of takeaways today. So just place your hands over your heart. Take a breath in and a breath out. And I want you to just think about what is the one main takeaway that you want to take with you from today's session. The one main thing that you personally want to make sure you commit to your long-term memory. And then just think about that. It takes between 25 and 30 seconds to commit something to the long-term memory, so just think about it. What is your takeaway? Not what we want you to know, but what your heart wants you to know. And then go ahead and type it into the chat box, which makes it 40% more likely that you'll remember. So type your takeaways into the chat box, and we'll have Chip here with us to read them and to see them all as they're coming in. And as we're closing, everybody, you know, I think one of the big reasons that I wanted to have Chip here is these moments of transition, really being guided through them. We so many of us, we don't have guidance, and we can listen to podcasts or we can read books or we can do all of these different things. But having, like you said, the community, having a whole process to go through and having the mindset shift and the internal transition helps us go through transitions a lot more.
It helps us to not feel alone.
Not feel alone.
I mean, the truth is that most of us feel alone and we're playing the game of life badly.
Sorry, I don't want to interrupt you.
Go for it. No, go.
So before we read these, people want to come to MEA.
Yeah.
What is the best way for them to do?
Well, go to the Modern Elder Academy website, modernelderacademy.com, and you'll see that right now for the next year, we have something, or next 10 months or so, we have sabbatical sessions, which is what you're at. Yeah, it's longer stays, lighter programming. It allows us to have sort of more of an open air community. All of our classes are outside, except for the yoga that's in a room that's completely open. Yeah, so you could go look at that. You can go check out I have a Wisdom Well, which is a daily
blog. This blog is amazing.
It's a daily blog. If you go there, just sign up for it. It's free, and you get an email sent from me every day. And it's all about wisdom. It's all about how do you cultivate and harvest wisdom at any age.
Beautiful. Well, we love you, Chip.
Yes.
Thank you for being here at the Kingdom. And thank you to all of you for listening. This is such a special time that we have together. And, one of the things that we always say is that as we learn to step into these tools together, as we learn to grow and evolve and change our mindsets, we're changing generations forward and backward. We're healing, really. And why this is important, not just for ourselves, but for the whole world, is because what doesn't heal repeats. And so we have the opportunity now to change for ourselves, change for the planet, and change for the future generations. Let's close with our closing prayer, everybody. God, Spirit, Universe, all that has been, all that will be, we thank you. Thank you for bringing Chip here with all of his wisdom and all the things that he's gone through, and for bringing him back from the flat line so that he can share with us in this beautiful way. Thank you for bringing us together and reminding us that we have so much life to live still yet. May we be inspired and motivated to help spread this message first throughout our lives and then into the lives of everyone we touch. May you be happy. May you all be free. May we all find peace. Thank you for coming to the Kingdom. Ashe, Aho, Salam, Amen, Satnam, Om. Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Kingdom Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love for you to rate it or subscribe. But most importantly, to send this episode to a friend or to someone you love. The only way we're going to see change in this world is by each of us spreading messages of hope into the corners of the world where only you can reach. So send this today to someone who needs it. I'm sure they'll thank you for it. This is Justin Michael Williams, signing out. I love you, and I'll meet you right here in this special place, in our next episode, where we rise together.